Hey everybody, if you want to tell the world something or sell the world something, head on over to Squarespace because they're going to help you build the website of your dreams. Say you want to sell some custom merch. Well, you can set up your online store. Whether you sell physical, digital, or service products, Squarespace has the tools you need to start selling online. So go to squarespace.com/stuff right now and you will face a free trial. And when you get ready to launch, use our offer code STUFF and then you'll save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. How could you go wrong with Squarespace?
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
Ahoy there, everybody. It's your old pal, Josh. And for this week's SYSK Selects, I have chosen our episode on disembodied feet. Yes, with the great title, Why Are So Many Disembodied Feet Washing Ashore in British Columbia? We released it back in June of 2016, and it's a cozy little mystery about feet washing ashore. And we don't know why still to this day. I hope you enjoy it. It's a really good episode.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. There's Charles W. Chuck Bryant. There's Jerry over there. And there are 6 feet in this studio right now. And all of them are exactly where they're supposed to be.
Attached to their lower legs.
Yeah.
Below the calf.
Yeah.
Yep.
Above the floor.
Facing forward.
Do you, right. Yeah, that's a big one too.
Key.
Because if it's facing backwards, you got problems.
No, or you're just going the wrong way all day long.
Maybe so. Do you know where they're not supposed to be, Chuck?
Feet?
Yes.
Well, they're not supposed to be on the armrest of the seat in front of you on an airplane.
Yes.
Or a movie theater.
Yes.
But I know you're not talking about common courtesies that bug me.
No. But I agree with you wholeheartedly. That is so wrong.
Yeah.
And I meant to tell you, I've come over to your side about taking shoes off on the plane.
Oh, good.
It's okay if I do it.
Okay.
But Yumi and I were flying somewhere, and this dude behind us had nasty, stinky feet. And he had his shoes off. And like we're facing forward, and we could smell his feet below our seats behind us. And I kept turning around, giving him the dirtiest looks, and he was like, he had no idea what I was doing.
Did you look at his feet and then at his face?
Yes, and he still didn't get it.
Did you look at his feet, his face, and then clamp your nose with your fingers?
I did that. Still didn't work. I threw up a little bit onto him.
Uh-huh.
He just thought didn't I was air sick, yeah.
Yeah. I know people disagree with me. People wrote in and were like, what's it to you? I thought it was to eat your own, Chuck.
Right, yeah.
And you know,
don't yuck
fine.
My yum.
Yeah. I'm a yum yucker.
All right, so I'll tell you a place where feet aren't supposed to be. They're not supposed to be off on their own on a beach somewhere.
Not attached to a body.
Exactly.
Well, they're not, no, that's not something that you see every day.
No, unless you're in Vancouver, and then it happens like almost every day, it seems like.
Not quite, but sure.
There's something very weird going on in Vancouver. You say there's no mystery. I say there's still a bit of a mystery to it, but we'll start at the beginning, okay?
Okay.
August 20th, 2007, it's kind of a cool and drizzly day at a place called Jedediah Island Provincial Park up in British Columbia, right near Vancouver.
Yeah.
Right?
Lovely area.
Sure. Of course.
Beautiful.
And that's why you would want to say, like, go park or camp at this park with your family, which is what a 12-year-old girl was doing. I couldn't find this girl's name to save my life, probably because she's 12.
Yeah, and she probably wouldn't be good to say it anyway.
She was sure. She was walking along the beach with her dad, and there was a bunch of, like, flotsam, you know, that's the term for stuff that washes up from the sea, that the sea spits up onto the shores. And she saw a shoe, and she picked it up, and she untied it and turned it upside down, and out fell a sock, and inside the sock was a human foot.
Yep.
And she was pretty surprised.
Size 12.
Yeah.
It was a campus brand shoe, which ended up being neither here nor there, but it is manufactured in India, mostly mm-hmm. sold in India.
Right.
And we'll just park that right there for now.
Yeah, so the family's like, this is unusual.
Sure.
They borrowed a radio from somebody else, and they alerted the authorities. And in very short order, the Mounties showed up, the coroner showed up, the Coast Guard showed up.
I bet the Mounties were all over that foot.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, they said, you know what, we're going to take that foot, if that's okay, little girl. And she, through her sobbing tears, said, sure.
But just give me a little money, okay?
And they said, we're going to send it off for DNA examination. And did that return nothing? The DNA?
As far as I know, yeah. There was no match.
So that wasn't like a clue?
The DNA?
Yeah.
No, but it was the first thing they tried.
Sure.
The DNA. They also looked at it to see what was going on with the foot, if there was any kind of signs of what the deal was.
Yeah, they held it up to their ear and pretended like it was a telephone. And one of the other Mounties said, that's not funny, eh?
Yeah, but they were like, oh, it is kind of funny.
And they said, sorry.
So they just kind of filed it away. It actually didn't make much of a stir outside of the area.
Nah.
It was worth talking about. It got a little bit of ink because it was just so weird. But
yeah.
They put the foot away at the coroner's office, and everybody went about their lives, right?
I would assume so.
And then 6 days later, another foot showed up in the area. Not the same place, but yeah. in the same general area.
Another right foot.
Which means it wasn't from the person's other foot.
No, that'd be weird.
So there's two people missing feet now.
Yes.
This is a men's Reebok size 11, I think. And the people who found it said that when they saw it, they immediately knew that there was a foot in there because it looked full.
It looked footy?
How they put it.
Full of foot?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they picked it up and smelled it, and they're like, yeah, it's a foot.
That's right. And the Mounties came in again, and they got off their horses, and Corporal Gary Cox said, you know, it is a little weird to find 2 feet.
Yeah, especially within 6 days of one another.
Yeah, in the same area. It was, he described it as a million to one odds. I don't think he did the science on that.
I don't either.
But it's just something you say.
Right.
But he said 2 is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
And I agree with him.
Yeah. So the first foot was on Jedediah Island. The second one's on Gabriola Island, which is, I couldn't find exactly how far away it was across the water, but it's not that far.
Right.
They're close, but they're separated by some water. And they're, now all of a sudden, there's 2 feet that were found within 6 days. The media starts to catch drift of this one.
Yeah.
Right?
There's feet, shoed feet washing up on the shores in Vancouver.
Right. And at that very time, Robert Picton was on trial in Vancouver for murdering as many as 49 women.
Ugh.
You've heard of him, right?
I think so, yeah.
He was the notorious pig farmer who would like butcher women and
yes.
feed them to his pigs, and then butcher his pigs and feed pigs to his guests.
Yeah, one of the only probably Canadian serial killers, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And one of the worst of all serial killers. He was a horrible, horrible person because he wasn't crazy. You know what I mean? He
right.
was just a horrible person.
Yeah.
And so he's on trial at that time. Got, I think, 25 years, which is like the maximum sentence you can get in Canada.
What?
Come on, Canada.
Yeah.
25 years for up to 49 horrible murders.
Yeah.
So he was on trial. There were also a lot of like really high profile missing people in the area too that had just vanished without a trace in the 4 years leading up to that.
Yeah, and you point out, because you wrote this, correct?
I did, but actually I was pointing out that Christopher Solomon pointed something out.
Okay, well, the point is, and this is a little strange, but maybe not. I don't know. I was trying to make sense of it. British Columbia apparently just has a higher than normal rate of missing persons than other parts of the world.
Yeah. Which is weird.
Yeah.
But I mean, like a lot more.
Yeah. More than 2,400 people over a 59-year period.
Mm-hmm.
And Solomon compared that to Kentucky, which is about the same size and population.
Right.
Or same size population. They only had 515 people missing over that 59 years. That seemed really low to me.
Did it?
8 people a year missing in the whole state?
Like That remained missing.
Okay, unsolved forever.
Yes.
Oh, because in Kentucky, they'll just be like, he was at Uncle Billy's right. down the road for a week.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
So, like, the idea is that BC has almost five times the number of
unsolved
missing persons cases over this 59 period compared to Kentucky, which has about the same size population.
That's a lot more.
Yeah, and I mean, Solomon might have gone in and selected, like, oh, Kentucky's got the lowest of the same size population, so that'll really point it out. But it does seem that BC has a large amount of missing persons.
Now, I bet it has something to do with the terrain and the wildlife.
Probably the abundance of water.
Probably that too.
It's not a good thing. Not good to have water.
A lot of heroin.
Yeah.
You know, sadly.
Yeah, and that
probably go missing. You know, on a drug bender.
In addition to the serial killer theory, one of them was that these were like people who had either run afoul of the local organized crime syndicates.
Yeah.
Or ran afoul of like a fellow heroin addict who
unorganized crime.
Exactly. Disorganized.
Yeah.
Remember that movie?
What movie?
Disorganized Crime.
Was that a movie?
Mm-hmm. With who's the dude, the blonde dude from L.A. Law?
Corbin Burnson?
Yes.
Wow.
It's actually a good movie.
Really?
I haven't seen it in a couple of decades. Hey, Summer School is one of the all-time greats, man.
It sounds like that kind of movie, Disorganized Crime, a bunch of bumbling criminals.
Definitely is. But I think like Fred Gwynne was in it, Herman Munster.
Oh, yeah.
One of his last roles.
Wow. All right, so you talked about theories. One of the other theories, remember we mentioned India manufactured that first shoe. Some people said, you know what, this is sadly just a feat of tsunami survivors from the Indian Ocean disaster, December 26, 2004. Mm-hmm. And they just years later, these like body parts are washing up on shore.
Yeah. Which is
sort of plausible.
It is. I mean, 250,000 people died from that tsunami. A lot, if not most of them, were never found.
Yeah. Also, we had people point out, remember when we said that modern disaster flicks are bad?
Mm-hmm.
We had a bunch of people write in and say The Impossible was a great movie.
That's the one about the tsunami?
Yeah, and it was great. It was awesome. But I just think that's different because that was a factual event.
But did you categorize it as a disaster flick?
No. See, I don't categorize it as that because it was a real thing that happened. Like, disaster flicks to me are when you invent some crazy disaster.
Well, okay. Well, let me ask you this. If it were totally fictionalized but the exact same movie, would you then consider it as a disaster flick?
Yes.
Okay. So it's like on that scale and everything too. I had the impression it was much more just like a human interest.
Well, it became that, but they showed the tsunami. Like, it's
Man, that was nuts.
Amazing how realistic it is.
I will check it out then.
Very, very tough movie.
Okay.
Very hard to watch.
Have you seen 12 Years a Slave yet?
Still cannot bring myself to watch that.
It's pretty rough.
It's just staring at me on my DVR every night. It'll be soon. I'll let you know.
Okay.
I'll just come into work crying.
Okay. I'll be like, what did I do now?
All right, so the tsunami disaster, they said, might have been one of the reasons, but I think other people said, you know, maybe that's not the best explanation.
Right. Other people said, well, a lot of people just go missing from other things, like planes go down in the Salish Sea, which is the body of water between, I think, Vancouver Island and mainland British Columbia.
Yeah, I think
which
it's
is where
Salish.
Most of these were found. Is it Salish?
I think so, but we'll hear from Canadians one way or the other.
You say Salish, I say Salish. Who's right, really, you know?
All right, well, we're getting all excited here with these theories, but there were more feet to come, and we'll get back to those feet right after this.
Hey, everybody, it's time you heard about Squarespace. Squarespace has the tools you need to create and sell your own website, whether it's an online course or custom merch. Squarespace has you covered.
That's right. Courses is a great program. You can start with a professional layout that fits your brand, upload video lessons to teach techniques and skills, and tailor your course with a powerful Fluid Engine editor.
That's right. With Fluid Engine, which is a next generation website design system, by the way, it's never been easier for anyone to unlock unbreakable creativity.
That's right. And don't forget the commerce side, because after that, you can charge a one-time fee or you can even sell a subscription.
Yeah. So turn your creativity into income with Squarespace courses. And right now, go to squarespace.com/stuff for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code STUFF to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Squarespace. All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
So Chuck, when those first two feet were found within 6 days, it made the rounds, people talked about it, and then it just kind of drifted out of the news, right?
Like a foot in the ocean.
Exactly. And then a third foot was found, and it came roaring back, because this was yet another foot, a totally different one. This was a woman's foot, actually,
mm-hmm.
A New Balance, size 7, I think.
Yeah.
And
Kirkland Island, same general area, right?
Right.
The same 40-mile stretch along that coastal area. And this is within 10 months now, 5 feet, 4 people.
Yeah, so the other New Balance sneaker was found. That was the 5th foot found. And then in between the...
Yeah, they matched the foot to the you know, I don't know if that's good or bad, but they found the guy's other foot.
Right, the woman. That was the woman that they
found. Oh, they found her 2 feet?
Yes.
Okay.
So her feet were number 3 and number 5 to turn up.
Gotcha.
And then in between, an entirely different person's foot turned up. A men's, like, size 11 Nike, I think.
Wow.
So, yeah, within a 10-month period, there were 5 feet belonging to 4 different people that turned up on this little stretch.
That's right.
That's significant.
Then there was a 6 foot.
Mm-hmm.
The next August... this was in actually Washington, so I guess it had its papers in order and made its way to the States. And so, like you said, if you're following the story at home as it's going on, you're starting to think, like, if I go to the beach, I'm going to see a foot today.
And a lot of people did do that.
Yeah.
A lot of people around British Columbia started looking for disembodied feet. They were turning up so frequently. And I misspoke. You were right. So the 7th foot to turn up was the woman's other foot.
Well, that's hard to keep track.
It really is.
With all these disembodied feet.
Really is.
So how many feet in total, sir? I think the last 2 were found February of this year.
Yeah, and they actually belong to the same person, but they were found a week or two or so apart.
Yeah. And I say last, I mean most recent. I'm sure more feet will come.
It seems that way because so the first foot was found in August 2007. These most recent feet were found in February 2016. That total 17 disembodied feet found within a 150-mile stretch between Tacoma, Washington, and British Columbia.
Wow.
That's unusual.
It seems like it.
And there's a lot of theories, but no one can say definitively, here's what's going on.
Right. And I know we're making a lot of jokes. I realize these feet belong to people who are no longer with us.
Yeah.
Just want to throw that out there.
Sure.
But we do a lot of comedy on this show, so.
We did a coma episode that had jokes. I mean, come on.
Okay, good. Just wanted to see you away there. So from the beginning, the cops and the Mounties were basically like, this seems really fishy, but it's not, we don't think it's murder.
Yeah.
We don't think there's someone out there killing people and chopping their feet off.
Right. Which is what a lot of people thought.
Yeah, but
and
notably,
still do, I think.
Because their feet weren't cut off, and you can tell.
Right. They were. They said that they were naturally disarticulated, right?
That's right.
So that first foot that girl found on Jedediah Island was identified pretty quickly because the cops released a picture of the shoe to the media.
Yeah.
And remember, it was a Campus brand, which is made in India,
sure.
Sold mostly in India. And so the guy whose foot it was— His family saw it on the news and identified him as somebody who he was a longtime sufferer of depression, and he was in a depressed state when his family last saw him. So the cops came to the logical conclusion that he had killed himself.
Right.
So foot number one has been matched to a missing person. Case closed, right?
That's right. So then the New Balance shoes turned up on separate islands. This is the woman, and she was identified as a lady who also was suffering from depression and jumped off a bridge.
Mm-hmm.
I think they knew this for sure.
Yes, that's where the woman was last seen, was jumping off a bridge.
Yeah, and this had been 4 years previous.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're starting to get a pattern here where, all right, there was another man, too, the one on Valdez Island,
mm-hmm.
Feet 3 and 5, they determined was either suicide or accident. And then another couple of people who were accidentally killed. And so they see this pattern now of, all right, these are people that just happened to die or died by their own hand near enough to the water where their feet were there.
Yes.
I'm just being vague for now.
Right.
Yeah.
But the weird thing is now all of a sudden, in a very short period of time, relatively short period of time, I mean, because one of these guys whose feet turned up was last seen after his boat turned over in 1987.
Yeah.
So in a very short period of time, all these people who died at very different periods of time, suddenly their feet were starting to turn up in this area around the Salish Sea.
Yes.
And the cops had a pretty good idea from the outset, but to understand what was going on, or at least what the cops say was going on, you have to understand what happens to a person who dies in the water.
Yes.
You think that people float, you know?
Yeah, you kind of think that because in movies, that you know, if you're trying to get rid of a body in the water, you always, you know, tie cement blocks to a cement shoes is right. The old joke.
Yeah.
You know,
somebody turned up like that in New York recently.
Like with cement shoes?
Yeah.
Wow.
Somebody saw too many movies.
But the idea is that you have to weight the body down. And I suppose if you were going to get rid of a body, I'd probably do the same thing just out of, you know, just covering my bases.
Just to be sure, right?
Yeah.
Well, the thing is if you do use cement shoes on a person,
yeah,
which you should never do that.
No.
But if you did, what you're doing is you're not ensuring that they sink right then. You're ensuring that they don't come back up.
Yeah.
Because that's what happens.
That's right.
Body that has gone unconscious or has drowned and died sinks pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And it usually sinks so quick that if you are looking for a drowning victim, you should look on the bottom pretty close to where they were last seen on the surface.
Yeah.
They sink that fast.
Man.
So a body sinks and it'll sink faster in fresh water than salt water because salt water makes humans a little more buoyant.
Yeah.
I guess overweight people with a lot of fat on their bodies, sink more slowly than people who are leaner.
Yeah.
And then depending on the water temperature as well and how deep the water is, they'll sink faster and faster as they get to the bottom.
Yeah, and depending on what you're wearing.
Yeah, like a coat or shoes or something like that.
That'll all weigh you down.
Or a backpack. It's,
yeah.
It's definitely going to pull you down. But the point is, once you go under, once you submerge and you're dead or you're dying, you're going to sink pretty quick.
Yeah, there's more pressure, too, the deeper you get in a body of water. You mentioned the temperature was lower, but there's also more pressure, and that compresses the air in your body, and that's going to make you less floaty as well.
Right.
So the thing the cool air or the cool temperature does down there is it kind of preserves you for a little while longer than ordinarily because the bacteria that will eventually consume your body are just going to be slower to do so.
They just move more slowly, right? But that bacteria is eventually going to overcome the sinking of the body because your body's an enclosed system generally, roughly. I mean, you got a mouth and all that, you know.
Sure.
But as they're eating, they're putting out as a waste product gases, like methane and stuff like that.
Yep.
And your body traps that stuff, and it begins to bloat. And everyone knows that once you bloat, you float.
That's right. That's the forensics bumper sticker.
Yeah, eventually you're going to rise to the top like a dirigible because of those gases that are trapped in your body.
Or like a submarine?
I guess.
Okay.
I guess.
Do you mean they keep going into the air?
Like
a,
right.
Like a blimp?
You float off, and then your foot will be found on the moon later.
Yeah, you're going to float, and that's why whenever people discover, like, a dead body in a lake much later, it's, you know, it's not a pretty thing. They're bloated and puffed out and decomposed.
Yeah.
It's not pretty.
But if you are trapped, say, like, in a vehicle or something like that.
Right.
And all of this takes place, eventually your body's going to be prevented from floating away.
Sure.
And it will eventually rupture. And once the rupture happens, all that gas and the buoyancy that's created by it is all released. And
so you're staying there.
You're staying there.
Yeah.
And I read this article about, did you read the article?
About the Oklahoma guy?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was really weird coincidence and sad.
It is. So, like, there was a guy who was, whose brother went missing in his Camaro in, I think, like, 1970.
Yeah.
And he just never knew what happened to him. And he used this boat ramp on this place called Foss Lake. And he found out later, when the cops accidentally discovered the car, that his brother had been submerged in just 12 feet of water for 40 years. All those times he was back in his boat into Foss Lake, his brother was right below him.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
And they found him accidentally, and then they found another car that had gone missing, I think, the year before, just a few feet away. And the moral of the story is that Foss Lake is really murky.
Wow.
I mean, 12 feet of water, two different cars.
A Camaro, yeah.
A Camaro and I think like a Packer or something like that, or a Buick.
Man.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. All right, well, let's take another little break here, and we'll talk a little bit more about what can happen to a body underwater. And what's the deal with all these feet?
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
Hey, everybody, if you're building a deck at work and you want to supercharge it, check out Canva presentations. Work docs have been the same for too long, but Canva docs are different. They're visual. They grab readers' attention with images, charts, tables, and videos playable right in the doc. Plus, docs don't have to be just words on a page. You can make your docs pop with Canva docs.
That's right. And Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, HR, ops, marketing, and more, Canva presentations can be the solution for you. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it.
Canva presentations might be the most visually impressive presentations you'll ever use. Start with a stunning template, use it as a springboard for your design, adding images, graphics, charts, data visualizations, all from a massive media library. It's super easy to wow any audience with Canva presentations.
So start designing today at canva.com, designed for work. That's canva.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. Just this year, there was a study. There's some criminologists at Simon Fraser U outside of Vancouver. And there have been a bunch of studies like this over the years where we've talked, you know, in our Body Farm episode, where criminologists and forensics experts try to see what happens to bodies under various conditions, including being sunk underwater. So they took a pig carcass in this case, not a human cadaver. And they sunk it kind of near where in the Salish Sea where these feet had been appearing. And these pigs' carcasses were, they were bones in a matter of days. It was really, really fast.
Yeah, they were really surprised.
Like, surprisingly fast.
Because, you know, conventional wisdom is that this took weeks, months, maybe even.
Sure. And other studies had shown that.
Right. And these things, these pigs were like just bones in a few days. They think it's possible that the Salish Sea is an anomaly because this was in almost 1,000 feet of water.
Yeah.
But it's really highly oxygenated, so there's a lot of life down there.
A lot more things to eat a body.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Whereas if you took it to another body of water in 1,000 feet, there might not be as much oxygen, so it might take longer. But for the Salish Sea, it's possible for something to be reduced to bones in a few days.
Yeah, here was my one problem with the way they did this study. Maybe I overthought it, but they trapped it under fencing.
Yeah.
Which presumably means that it was just, you know, kind of in one place the whole time.
That's true.
I would have, like, if you're going to simulate a human body, I would have maybe shackled a leg and put a long leader,
right,
100, so it could move around and see what a body would do.
Right.
Yeah, see the sights.
Anyway. Yeah, because a body can move on the bottom a little because there's currents
it would
under
think
there.
So.
You know?
That so that's can, just, you know, minor gripe.
Yeah. But yeah, did you see the video of it? The time elapse video?
Oh no.
It's really something.
Nah.
It's gross.
Don't need it.
So there was another study that I found that really kind of ties all this together. It was from 1992, and it was carried out by the coroner of Kings County, which is where Seattle is.
Yes.
And he or she, I think it was a he, looked at bodies that had been pulled from the water, and he took the amount of time they'd been in the water submerged and then the amount of body parts that were left, or exactly what body parts were left.
Right.
And basically went back and reverse engineered the process by which a body comes apart when it's submerged underwater.
Yeah, that's valuable information.
It really is.
You know?
And so what they came up with was that the skin, the thinnest areas of skin typically cover like joints, so like your wrist and ankles.
Yeah.
Those get eaten away first, which exposes that soft tissue beneath that holds your hand to your arm or your foot to your leg. And then that gets attacked by scavengers and all the other stuff that's eating it. And so between the things eating that soft tissue holding the bones together and the wave action or the currents at the bottom of the body of water, the hands and then the feet work loose. They disarticulate.
Yeah.
So they naturally will fall off the body as the body's decomposing, submerged underwater, and they are among the first parts to go.
That's right. And if you're just a foot and you're not wearing a shoe, then chances are that foot will get consumed and you will never see it again. Although one of these feet was a barefoot, correct?
Yes.
Which seems to be a little bit of an outlier.
A little bit.
But if you've got a shoe on that thing that's tied up nice and tight and you're disarticulated at the ankle, that foot is still inside that shoe, going to make it really hard for a scavenger to get in there. And it's very possible that that foot will not decompose, or at least decompose very slowly.
Right. And not only that, will it be protected? Once it disarticulates, if it's wearing a certain kind of shoe, specifically an athletic shoe that's made in the last like 15, 20 years,
yeah,
it's going to have air injected into the sole.
Yeah.
And in the case of like, remember Nike Air Maxes? They had actual air pockets like in between the sole and the bottom of the shoe.
Yeah.
And that actually creates a buoyant effect that will lift a shoe, including one that has a foot still inside, to the surface.
Yeah. So they started looking at all these cases, and they said, well, almost all of these are athletic shoes.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes sense. And it's going to bob upside down because of that rubbery sole.
Right.
So it's going to be protected even more from birds and things.
Right.
So what we have here is a case of people that just happened to die, and their feet happened to come away from their bodies and be well protected by these awesome running shoes.
Yes.
And eventually made their ways to shore.
Yep.
But a little bit weird that they would happen in this area in such a span of time, I would still say, right?
That's to me the, and we should say that's what you just said, that's the cop's position.
Yeah.
And it has been basically since the outset, since the first foot was found.
Basically nothing to see here.
And there's not a lot there to undermine it,
yeah,
or attack it. Like, it's a pretty sound position.
Yeah.
But there is still a mystery to it, to me, in that why British Columbia? Like, it doesn't make sense. And there's a couple of explanations. One is that the Salish Sea is something like a lagoon where water flows in from the Pacific Ocean from the south northward,
mm-hmm,
into the Salish Sea, and once stuff goes in there, it basically recirculates. It doesn't come back out very often.
Well, that when you see the sign that says Salish Sea, it says feet flow in, they don't flow out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right? So once you see that sign, you're like, well, there's the explanation,
yeah,
right? The idea is that the Salish Sea would experience a higher incidence of flotsam of all types, including feet, which is one explanation.
Yeah.
It could be right.
Well, I'm sure that has something to do with it.
Sure.
The other explanation is one of my favorite things in the world, which is a version of, there's a couple of names for it. There was a guy named Arnold Zwicky in 2006, a linguistics professor at Stanford, who coined a term, frequency illusion. And that's one of the cognitive biases where basically if you are looking for something, you're going to find it.
Mm-hmm.
All these people saw in the news feet washing up on the shore. So like you said, they all started looking,
mm-hmm,
for feet.
And every time a foot was found, it just supported the idea that, yes, there's something really weird going on here, which only increased the awareness and the focus on this, which means that people started seeing more and more feet.
That's right. So frequency illusion specifically is a mix of selective attention and confirmation bias. So in this case, selective attention, unconsciously keeping an eye out for that new thing that you were just told about, which is the feet.
Mm-hmm.
And the confirmation bias in this case is the reassurance that it's just proof, more and more proof of its omnipresence, more feet.
Right. You could see that happening here, for sure.
Pretty interesting.
It's called the Bader-Meinhof phenomenon, too.
Yeah, I didn't know where that came from. There was a dude, until I looked it up, 1994, it was just a commenter on the Pioneer Press,
mm-hmm,
of St. Paul discussion board. And he had heard about the Bader-Meinhof terrorist group a couple of times in one day.
Right, the first time.
Yeah, and just said, you know, Bader-Meinhof phenomenon.
Right.
And it became a meme.
Yeah.
I thought it was more, I don't know, I thought it was cooler than that.
No.
I thought there was some cool explanation.
No.
That wasn't just some dude online.
It definitely sounds cooler than it is.
It sounds way cooler than it is. But it's a common thing. You talk about 11:11 on the clock is a big one for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Say, you know, I see 11:11 all the time on the clock.
Right.
It's because you're looking for it.
Sure. Frequency illusion.
Yeah.
It's not actually happening more than it ever was. You're just paying more attention to it now. And this is a really, really unnerving suggestion, man, because it says that feet washing up on the shore is way more common than any of us realize. And that if you went over and picked up an athletic shoe on a beach somewhere, there's a good chance that there's going to be a foot inside. We just aren't aware of this as human beings and outside of Vancouver, right?
That's right.
So that makes Vancouver the capital of the disembodied feet capital of the world. I don't know that that necessarily holds up, though. I don't think it's been explained.
Yeah, because, I mean, I bet you it's frequency illusion.
I disagree. I think it's something else. I think it probably has to do with the hydrology or something about Vancouver or British Columbia.
Yeah.
There's this database called Name Us, and it's like a catalog of unidentified remains.
Yeah.
And I did a search for disarticulated foot. And out of like 40,000 unidentified remains in the U.S.
30,000 were from Vancouver?
The only three were disarticulated feet.
Okay.
And one was found in the Washington State area.
Wow.
So you could technically kind of include it in that weird Vancouver clump. One was in Maryland and one was in Dallas. That was it.
Wow.
So it does really seem like Vancouver has a higher than usual incidence of disarticulated feet showing up in its area.
Wowie.
Which is weird.
Are you on the case?
No. I'm just a fan.
Oh, okay.
So you got anything else?
No. I just realized, though, I've been like rotating my feet around and like just feeling
making
weird.
Sure they're there?
Sort of.
If you want to know more about this, you can actually, there are three really good articles that I read in addition to some other ones, but three stood out. One was by Winston Ross of the Daily Beast. One was on Pacific Standard. I didn't see an author. And then Christopher Solomon's Outside article. Those are all pretty standout. And since I said standout, it's time for listener mail.
I'm going to call this Internet Roundup. I don't know if people watch, but we have an internet show called Internet Roundup.
Several hundred people watch.
Yeah, and it's like the silliest thing we do. Mm-hmm. We sit down in the studio on video, and we just talk about a couple of things on the internet that we think are neat.
Right.
So that is the setup. Hey, guys, I was recently on a Delta flight, and they show these on Delta.
Yeah.
And this is not an ad for Delta.
No.
I was recently on a Delta flight from Atlanta to Austin, keeping an eye out for your hat, Chuck. I got very excited when I remembered I could watch your Internet Roundup show on the plane to pass the time. As we began our descent into Austin, sudden thunderstorms developed. It was quite bumpy, to say the least. If you have never been on a plane that unsuccessfully tried to land in a thunderstorm, I don't recommend it. I just had listened to your How to Survive a Plane Crash episode from 2008 just that week before, and I remember thinking how grateful I was that I was in the back of the plane because Chuck said I had a better chance of surviving that way. It's not much of a chance, but sure. I just thought you would like to know that despite the horrible weather going on, I never lost connection with your show. Watching Internet Roundup and able to listen and watch you guys really helped me keep calm until our pilot finally gave up trying to land and diverted the plane to Houston. That's even scarier. You know?
Yeah.
I'm not going to try anymore.
Well, let's go to Houston. Close enough.
Yeah. In the end, everyone made it to Austin safely, though, so thanks for everything you guys do. And that is from Lauren Sprouse.
Thanks a lot, Lauren. Have you ever watched videos of planes that come in for a landing, but it's too windy, so they have to, like, immediately take back off?
No, that's never happened.
Like, they touch down and take off? If you watch those waiting to get onto a plane, it's a really good way to just poke at your brain.
Wow.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
If you want to get in touch with us, you can hit us up on Twitter at SYSK Podcast. You can join us on Instagram at SYSK Podcast too. You can join us on Facebook.com/StuffYouShouldKnow. You can send us an email to StuffPodcast@HowStuffWorks.com. And as always, join us at our home on the web, StuffYouShouldKnow.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Childproofing people's homes is hard, but Duracell is making it just a bit simpler. Not only are they committed to educating parents, caregivers, and medical professionals about the importance of battery safety, they make the only lithium coin batteries with a non-toxic bitter coating to help discourage children from swallowing them. Duracell even features child-secure packaging designed to avoid accidental opening. Learn more at Duracell.com/powersafely. Available on 2032, 2025, and 2016 sizes.
Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.